Hello and welcome to the Mogwai Podcast with me, Amanda Stanley. Mogwai's 1997 compilation album of singles, B-sides and rarities gets its first official release on vinyl for Record Store Day this year. And to celebrate in this episode, I'll be catching up with Stuart from the band to discuss the release of the record. And later on, I'll be talking with longtime producer and engineer Paul Savage to discuss recording those early Tin Rapids singles and also the recording of Mogwai Young Team. As imagined, you can expect some interesting stories and insights from Paul into how the recordings went down back in the studio some 20 years ago.
Watching these young guys come in and thinking, they're like a wee gang. That was the first thing that struck me. It's just like they're a gang of people. They're a unit, and it just they had their own way of speaking to each other, and they were funny as fuck.
But first, here's my conversation with Stuart at the Rock Action office in Glasgow. It's now 20 years and getting its first ever official vinyl release for Record Store Day. I want to talk about Tin Rapids.
Yeah.
What made you decide, or the band decide, to release it then?
Well, it's been out in vinyl before on our old label Jet Set from America. Jet Set didn't consult with us on the record. Their copies that were out, the only ones to existence until now, cut two songs that were mixed to join each other on one side to the other side, which is just terrible and amateurish. So yeah, we always wanted to come back out, and yeah, I guess Record Store Day is a kind of, that's the kind of release that people, it's a lot of reissues and a lot of different versions of records and stuff. It's not that normal for someone to release their brand new records on Record Store Day, so it just seemed to make sense.
Do you partake in Record Store Day as a punter?
Yeah, I do. We've done a few things. In fact, there was a Mogwai, Ethan Moffat and Bill Wells split that we did a few years ago, and I go along, and yeah, there's a great thing in Glasgow with Monorail, friends of ours, Ben from Blank Mass, who also, we put a record out in Rock Action, is DJing at Monorail alongside Bossy Love, who are friends of ours, and I think it's a good thing to just kind of get people into record shops, and I think it's been a great thing for record shops, you know. Yeah.
So it was produced by Andy Miller and Paul Savage, and I'd spoken to Paul a wee while ago. He was talking about the early days of recording with yourselves, uh-huh. Like you and the rest of the Mogwai guys, and basically, I think to quote, he said he described you as a funny as fuck gang of teenagers,
yeah,
coming into the MCM studios to record the first singles, which, yeah, obviously would then make up Tin Rapids, and then from then on Mogwai Young Team. So I wanted to ask you, like, what are your memories of first going into that studios as relatively young lads and laying down them first tracks with someone like Paul?
It was just a lot of fun, and I guess we'd done a few demos, and we actually did our first 7-inch in a different studio, and that wasn't a brilliant experience. So I think, like, doing those recordings with Paul was our first good studio experience, because yeah, Paul was from similar background to us, liked a lot of the same music, and there were four other labels too, so it wasn't our own money. Like, our first 7-inch, I think Martin's mum gave him money for his birthday or something to record it. So like the ones where the Angels versus Aliens split single on Shay, Summer, which was on Love Train, that was Paul, and then we also recorded some stuff, one for a tape that was for the 10-day weekend. I think we played at King Tut's as well, and everyone got a free tape. So yeah, one of the songs was for that. It was so 90s. People now like just think tapes are things people buy ironically in Urban Outfitters. And yeah, and we re-recorded our first single as well, Tuner, with Paul, I think, maybe Andy, I can't remember. So that's what went on the Tin Rapids compilation.
Were you sure that you were going in fully prepared with these recordings?
We were pretty prepared, because we used to practice all the time. Like, I can't remember how often, but it wasn't once a week. Like, we would rehearse all the time, and we'd rehearse in Martin's bedroom in Blantyre, which is amazingly tolerant of his parents, because we were as loud then as we are now. It was disgusting how loud we were. And yeah, we were really prepared, and we were just enjoying it. It was just a lot of fun, and I'd done some recording. I did a music college course. I'd done some recording But Paul probably told you this, but the deal for Mogwai Young Team was that they bought some bit of equipment with the recording budget, because by that point they owned, because MCM Studios became Chem 19. So yeah, it worked out that the entire recording of Mogwai Young Team came to £2,000 or something, which is pretty good. VFM. But yeah, back during those early sevens and stuff, no, it was just dead exciting and really, really fun. And
what attracted you to working with Paul? Because obviously at the time he'd already be working with BIS and like Arab Strap as well, like we mentioned earlier with Aiden, bands around that time. Was it from like-minded or like peers like that you'd seen in the industry that you were drawn to Paul, or were you already aware of his work outside of these?
I think we just met him and we were fans of what he'd been doing. I mean, especially that first Arab Strap record was pretty kind of defining record for us. We were all huge fans of it, and he's a really nice guy, you know. He's managed to remain a nice guy over the years. He's not let his ego go crazy or anything. No, he's just a really, really good guy to work with, and yeah, I'm very fond of him.
During the recordings, especially of like Summer and stuff like that you would just be like overriding units left, right and centre, and just demanding that he pushes it louder and louder. Was it perhaps because this was it becoming this kind of thing?
I think a lot of it was probably just us not really understanding how things worked. I think a lot of it was
it was nice that he was there to facilitate that
then. Yeah, I think we just had some kind of really weird kind of ideas of how recording worked, and like not realizing that you don't actually need to be that loud for a record to sound loud. But yeah, there is a really good bit of there's a bit of my favourite bit of feedback that we've recorded is in Summer, and I guess that probably wouldn't have happened if the amp hadn't been
blown
disgustingly
up.
Loud. Yeah.
Now to my conversation with producer and engineer Paul Savage of Chemical Underground Records. I began by asking Paul how he first met Mogwai.
I was in the studio, so I was working at what would eventually become Chem 19. It was MCM Studios in Hamilton, and I was coincidentally being part of the band and the label, and that was basically where we like best recorded Candy Pop in that place. And but I think it must have been round about 95, 96 that Mogwai just booked in. They just called up the studio and I was told you've got to come and engineer this band. So these wee guys from Lanarkshire, and just turned up, and it was quite something watching them, just thinking, you see people walk in, and I was like maybe 3 years older, I would have been about 25, and they were like maybe they were still in their teens. I think they might have been. So I was like definitely the kind of, even though I was only 24, 25, I felt like the old guy in the whole scenario, watching these young guys come in and thinking they're like a wee gang. That was the first thing that struck me. It's just like they're a gang of people. They're a unit, and it just, they had their own way of speaking to each other, and they were funny as fuck, and they were just like really, just really together as a group of people. But I wasn't so sure whether they would be any good, because your first impression is they're so young. I certainly thought that maybe they would just be a lot more punky, they'd be a lot more, well, just of their age. But as soon as as soon as I heard their music, I couldn't believe how they could easily have been like 10, 15 years older. They were just doing this really sort of mature's a terrible word, it has bad connotations, but for their age, it was like, it was beyond their years. I didn't know any bands that could that had that restraint. That was the thing. It was like, we're not going to give it all away right away. It was like, we'll hold all this back, we'll build this tension, and they could create this atmosphere by holding that tension and not giving it all away too much. You know, at the start, they had this ability to sort of like this confidence in the you know, in what they were doing.
Was it like in the studio with them? How organised were they back then at the time with the album in mind, like a proper full studio debut? What was the experience like then?
It was different from the singles, because they had released a few singles. Summer in particular was it got so much attention, but it was such a visceral single.
Being quite young as a producer in that regard in the studio, how did you, like, your role, how did you fit in with, like, were you quite actively involved in the kind of creative decision making that was going on at the time, or were you more kind of passively just kind of suggesting?
Probably more passively suggesting, because they are, I didn't know what the term producer was, so, you know, I wasn't aware of being a producer on that record. That, as far as I knew, I was a recording engineer. But a lot of times I'll explain to people how I feel that when you're an engineer in Scotland, that you don't have the, certainly back in a bigger studio in London, you might have had the hierarchy of engineer, tape op, or assistant and runner on a big record, and the producer. And these roles can be quite clearly defined. So the producer might not even touch a microphone or a desk or anything to do with that. And the recording engineer just sets up the mics with the assistant and does the job. But for me, working in that studio with that kind of small budget in Scotland, away from that kind of hierarchy, I mean, people just simply couldn't afford the wages for three extra people. That wasn't happening at our studio at the time. So what I think happens in smaller studios is that you become a kind of hybrid of a producer and an engineer, and you end up doing all these little jobs yourself. And I think it's always been the case with me, is like, I don't tell people what to do, but how much I get involved in the kind of the guts of the songs and the way that things go forward is based on the relationship that I may have with them. So if they want me to be involved, certainly back then it was much more of a feel thing. Whereas now, I'm kind of lucky. I love the fact now that someone will come to me and ask to produce, and that means that they're kind of giving up control. Whereas back then, it was a little bit more of a prove yourself first as an ideas guy. Like, if I suggested, right, why don't we put a mic over here, and why don't you play something like that, and I'll do something with it. And if we try it and it sounds crap, then they go, not listening to him, he talks pish. So it would be a case of like trying to prove yourself. So if you suggest something and it works, okay, so you next time you would get more, and then you start being brought into the discussions about what do you want to do with this, how are we going to make this better, and turn into me, you know, as well as the rest of the band, and just becoming part of the unit. Thank you.
first kind of like proper studio album that they released is now 20 years old, which is crazy to think about. So Mogwai Young Team, and you produced that record and engineered it.
I didn't always just take all the bands that I worked with at the studio and take them to the label, because there were so many people coming in and out of the studio. But there was, I had mentioned to them about Mogwai, and when Mogwai were beginning to look around, I remember saying we should speak to them, and they had the similar feeling as well, we should speak to Chemical Underground. So it was just quite an easy, it was an easy fit. So when we decided, right, okay, we're going to be working with you, you're going to do an album, and it was different to the singles. It was harder, and it was harder probably for all of us, including me, because I hadn't done many full length records. I'd been used to just recording. I mean, when I first started out as an engineer, I was getting those jobs where a terrible pub band would roll up on a Saturday morning with a crate of tenants, and I'd have to record their nonsense for 12 hours, and they'd want to record like 10 songs recorded and mixed. And it was a real, you know, I was still the young engineer then. That was what I was kind of used to doing. And I think the pace of an album is different. It's a different thing to do. So we started chipping away at it, and I think we did it over about between 4 and 6 weeks all in the summer of 97. And it was harder than we all anticipated. But it was like it was harder to finish. I think the start, you know, like there were a few key songs that were already there, like Herod, Mogwai Fear Satan. Those ones came, you know, quite quickly. But there were other ones that didn't quite have, like, maybe the attention that these other ones had. So when you come in as a band and you're doing a single, you probably spent, you know, 3 weeks practicing a couple of songs. Whereas when you have to do a full album, it's a bit harder to have that sort of like depth, that whole range of material and all ready. So there were a few moments where we had to chat and say, like, we need some ideas for these. They're not quite there yet. They're not quite ready. Those few singles beforehand, they really paid off, because I suppose I had won their trust, and I knew what they wanted. I knew what kind of thing that they were going for, and it was usually as extreme as we could get it. And it was a lot of fun. It was just amazing for me, because they didn't know much about the studio, and I was kind of like trying to be the engineer and not distort things and, you know, do things you normally do. But they were just so, no, make it bigger, you know, like, just do more, like. And I'd go, okay, how about that? No, more, just like bigger. And I'd go, and I finally got it. It was like, all right. And then I kind of, once we got that that working relationship going, it was really handy just to know that there are no boundaries with this stuff. It was as like I could send it to multiple effects units, and they could all be like lighting the room up with their overload lights, and it just, the whole thing would just be sounding incredible, but not something that you should be doing. And it was like we were all being really naughty at the same time, you know, going, oh yeah, this is not how we should do it, but we love it. This is just really bonkers. I think I blew up some units, and, you know, like the sound of a dying, you know, reverb unit, and the noises that it makes when it does that. It's just, you know, you got to push the limitations of the equipment. It was quite a small studio with one main live room and one control room and a tiny little vocal booth, which I think we probably put Dominic's bass in when we recorded it all. And there was two, right next to that, there was two rehearsal rooms. So there was always people milling about, and there was guys from Bells Hill in a band called Junior Function, and Barry was one of them. And that's when they first met Barry. You know, Barry wasn't actually, he was on Young Team in a way, because he was one of these characters that we had at the studio who was always around. Yeah, there was lots of, it was chaos. I mean, it was like when we were recording, we wanted to record it all live and it was all to tape. So you forget about how things are so easy now with digital recording. In some ways it's not necessarily better, it's just different. But they would capture a real performance, and there was a lot of, like, I mean, I remember the whole control room was turned upside down because we had to put the guitar amps in the control room with me, and everyone was in headphones. When you just let them go and it was a performance. They still cast it up to me to this day. We didn't have a lot of reels. This sounds terrible. It's because it's sacrilegious. This is Mogwai's first album, but I think I had 2 or 3 reels, 1-inch tape. Each tape had 16 minutes on it. And there was Mogwai Fear Satan. There was a couple of versions of that. And one of them kind of fell apart a wee bit at the end. So there was two main takes of Mogwai Fear Satan, and they were done in different days. So the first one was done with Pete from Kinnicky, you know, Lauren Laverne's brother. And Pete came up and it was brilliant, apart from one bit near the end, and it was like it kind of went off a bit, and it was back when it was really hard to, I mean, almost impossible to edit these things on tape. So it just kind of fell up, it kind of like went out of sync a little bit, everyone drifted a bit and kind of came back in. And remember, I think everyone had decided that, okay, well, the other one that we did, and I think Brendan might have been playing drums with Martin, which is the one that's on the record, they've decided that's the one we'll keep. And in the meantime, we started recording more stuff, and I got to the point where I was running out of reels, and I thought, like, what are we going to do? 16 minutes in a reel, and I think this one reel was just taken up by this version with Pete on drums. So I scrubbed it, and they didn't know right away because we'd recorded all the rest of it. I mean, the rest of the album was recorded using that reel, but it got to the end and they were like, oh, let's hear that other version. I said, that's gone. That's, I had to use that reel. And what? And they just, I mean, they were happy. They're happy enough for Young Team with Mogwai Young Team song as it stands. But I think it's good leverage for them. They can always like cast it up, going, you fucking recorded over that brilliant take with Pete from Kinnicky, and it's lost now. And it's like, yeah. So I get a bit of a pounding for that.
Thanks to Paul and Stuart for taking the time to talk in this episode. Mogwai's 10 Rapid Collection is available as a heavyweight white vinyl produced on a limited run especially for Record Store Day 2018. Mogwai will be heading back out on tour at the beginning of May, starting with Mexico City on the 6th. Be sure to keep up to date with where the band are playing and with all Mogwai news by heading to mogwai.co.uk. Next time on the podcast, I'll be chatting with Aidan Moffat and RM Hubbert ahead of the release of their debut album, Here Lies the Body, which is coming out on Rock Action on the 11th of May. Be sure to hit subscribe to this podcast so you're the first to hear that episode when it drops.